Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Vegan Food and Living Simply Vegan podcast with me, Holly Johnson, and my co-host, Molly Pickering. Yep, it's the Holly and Molly show. Each week, we'll be ranting about vegan news, raving about new food launches, and responding to your questions on all things plant-based. I also chat to vegan chefs, experts, and influencers about everything from fermented food and nutrition to weight loss, herbalism, and seaweed. Sweet Freedom Choc Shot is a delicious, better-for-you chocolate syrup. It's incredibly popular with dieters as it's only 13 calories per teaspoon, plus is naturally sweetened only with fruit extracts, has no added sugar, is GMO-free, palm oil-free, recyclable packaging, and even high in healthy fibre. As you can see from their hugely buzzy Instagram and Facebook pages, it has hundreds of uses and masses of user-generated content. From drizzling it over ice cream, pancakes, porridge, yogurt and fresh fruit to healthier baking, we love it in our overnight oats, and you can simply add it to chilled plant milk and stir to make an amazing chocolate treat. It's so incredibly popular. It's now in all supermarkets, including Sainsbury's, Tesco, Waitrose, Asda, Morrison's, Holland & Barrett and Ocado. Find it next to the hot chocolate on the shelves. The founders are huge animal lovers, and so all their products are cruelty-free, and they even donate part of their profits to PETA Animal Charity. Welcome to Series 4, everybody. How are you, Molly? You had a good week off?
Yes, I did. Thank you. This is strange, a new series.
I know. How are you? Yeah, I'm really well, thanks. I've been away camping in Devon, which for anyone not in the UK is kind of a little little county by the sea, lots of rocky coasts. Yeah, really beautiful, but slightly behind the times in terms of vegan food. So it was kind of interesting at times. Yeah, plus the fact that a lot of staff were off because they'd all been pinged by the NHS COVID app. So it was kind of like chaos everywhere. They had like two staff and we had to... One place we had to wait for an hour to eat to get a table. But when we did, it was amazing. It's a little place at Saunton Sands called the Beachside Grill, and the service was absolutely brilliant. And they had so many vegan options. They had like loaded jackfruit fries with like barbecue sauce and cheese, a cauliflower steak, which I always think sounds a bit like, really, it's just a piece of cauliflower. But the things that they'd done with it, all the flavors and the little extras.
I have this thing as well. Like, I'm always like this, like whenever someone says like a cauliflower steak or whatever, I'm just like, you know, what are you going to do? But no, they always tend to pull out the bag, don't they?
Yeah. It was really incredible. It had like onion bhaji kind of with it. Yeah, really good. And then like a tabbouleh salad. So yeah, really excited to find that little gem. But apart from that, we just did loads of stuff like round the campfire. So we did like vegan halloumi and veg kebabs. We had a taco night with salsa and guacamole. And
oh, wow.
Spiced chickpeas, which are from a Deliciously Ella recipe. So yeah, it was really good fun. And the friends we went with are not vegan at all. However, my friend has started to like get quite excited about plant-based eating and go off meat.
Oh, okay. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I feel like I've been sort of converting her quietly over the last year or two. And now she's just like, oh my God, you can do that with tofu. I did like a tofu BLT or TLT, where I sort of pan fried some marinated tofu and had that whilst the boys were tucking into their horrible bacon sandwiches. So
that's such an exciting part, isn't it, when like you're discovering all of these new like incredible things that you can do with just like simple products that, you know, fruit and veg, so versatile.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it still amazes me, to be honest, even after time. I also went to Camp Bestival yesterday, so I'm feeling a little bit tired. But that was brilliant, and loads of lovely vegan options there, including Happy Mackie, who are based in Brighton. They had a little food truck there, and they're the vegan sushi place. So, definitely check those out to anyone listening. Did you have a nice birthday?
I had the best day. I'd say the best day. It went on for like a week. I was being a queen.
It's got to go on for at least a week.
It was amazing. My boyfriend spoilt me rotten. I was filled with cake and delicious food, went out for food.
Where did you go?
We went to this is in like Bedminster in Bristol. It's not a vegan pub, but it's like a gastro pub that does really, really nice vegan small plates. And they've got this dedicated vegan chef to come in. And oh my gosh, I had like vegan calamari.
Wow, how do they do that?
With oyster mushrooms.
Love it.
Oyster mushrooms wrapped in nori. And then what else did we have? Barbecue ribs like made from jackfruit and tofu. Like, but they weren't too heavy. They were like really, really nice. Seitan lamb with like homemade flatbread and
oh my god.
Baba ganoush. Oh, amazing. I was spoilt. And then we had a beetroot and blackcurrant chocolate mousse for dessert.
Wow.
It was good.
What's the name of the pub?
The Malago.
Okay. I need to check this out. It sounds incredible.
I've got a friend that works there and they said that they've been very dedicated to like, you know, making sure that their vegan dishes are up to scratch, like with the rest of their food, because I think they are like quite renowned for, you know, fine dining and stuff. So yeah, it's quite interesting to see sort of fine dining vegan place happening, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, falafels and hummus isn't going to cut it.
No. But yeah, had loads of stuff. Had my first like vegan fish and chips, which was just like tofu and chips, but it was delicious. Went to Kucha. My boyfriend got me a beautiful cake. It was like this over the top pink and green birthday cake, and it was lemon and elderflower. It was amazing.
Wow. Oh,
I know.
Sounds like you've done a lot of eating, the same as me.
I've my diet has started back, don't worry.
Well, it's not all bad though, is it? You know, I just love all the healthy foods as well as the odd bit of, you know, vegan junk food.
You've got to treat yourself.
Definitely. Okay, let's discuss the news. So first of all, Gordon Ramsay, bit of a shocker this one. He's actually advertising a plant-based oat milk brand called Silk in the USA. I can't believe that.
It was a bit of a shock when I seen it. At first I was like, no, what are you doing? You're just cashing in. All of these things come to my head. And then I kind of thought about it a bit more and I read a bit more about his history like with veganism, and I didn't realize that he back in 2018 like he did actually start to invest more in his restaurants with vegan food. So he introduced like more vegan dishes, and he said like his kids have like inspired him to try more plant-based foods, which is actually quite cool. And I think that, you know, you need voices like his. You know, I think a lot of people look up to him and see him as like a meat kind of guru,
yeah,
almost. And then, you know, he's promoting dairy-free milk. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. I suppose he just has to be controversial, doesn't he? That's kind of part of his persona, yeah, on TV. But like you say, behind the scenes, maybe the kids are like, come on, Dad, you know, you need to up your game now with climate change, yeah, and everything else going on in the world. So, yeah, really good to see it. And like you say, the more celebrities that kind of get on board with things, the better.
Definitely.
Another quick piece of news I just spotted on the Vegan Food and Living website, I just had to mention, is that an 84-year-old vegan ultramarathon runner has just completed 53 kilometres of the Southwest coast to coast, and he's raised over £1,000 for Viva. I just think this is amazing. It's 84!
It's amazing. I can't even run up my stairs, let alone, what was it, 55 kilometres? That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that is in terms of miles, but yeah, I mean, I guess what's park run on a Sunday morning, like 5K?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's quite a long way.
A lot. I'm trying to think. I don't even know what a marathon is. I think there might be more than a marathon.
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it? So yeah, Paul, I think his name's Paul Yaud or Yaud. And it's, he started running during lockdown. I mean, and he's got, it's brilliant. Check out the story on the website. He's got a hat on. It says vegan AF. Yeah.
He's just like the cutest little guy. He's just happy to be there. And he's amazing. I think he put me to shame times 10. It's, yeah, amazing.
It's absolutely brilliant. I really want to start raising money for some of these vegan charities, actually. I really should put it on my sort of radar a bit more. And I have said this a few times on the podcast when I've spoken to people and just come away feeling really inspired. And, yeah, then I just kind of get busy and don't do it. So this notes to issue, self.
We kind of need another lockdown just so I can do all the things that I want to do.
Yeah.
Without the pandemic, I just want a lockdown.
Yeah. Just want a few months off, please. Thank you very much. Another piece of news, again, on the veganfoodandliving.com website. Food tech company Redefine Meat has announced it will launch its range of 3D printed vegan meat products in the UK later this year. Wow. So this is already on sale in Israeli restaurants and hotels. And the second phase of the rollout will be in Europe as well, USA and Asia in 2022. So what do you think about 3D printed meat? I mean, it blows my mind that you can 3D print anything, but
I'm just so clueless when it comes to stuff like this. Like, I just can't, my brain can't understand what 3D printing is. So in my head, I just think it's going to be plastic, but I know it's not. I think it's made from like soy and soy protein and pea protein and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it mimics the textures of meat.
Yeah, like the cell structures and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, what is mad? And to think it's going to be in the UK in like, what, less than, what are we, August now, 4 months? Yeah. That's mad.
Absolutely amazing. Would you eat it?
Oh, it's torn, people. And I'd try it, but I don't think I'd rely on it.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it's still a processed product, but
yeah.
I guess it's just taking, because this isn't taking cells from animals, is it? It's still plant-based products.
Oh yeah, no.
Made to use it. It's just going to be even more realistic.
Yeah, I think it's like the way that they've, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know what they've done.
It's way over our heads. But yeah, go Redefined Meat. Thank you for, just hopefully getting some more people on the plant-based wagon, as it were. Well, talking of plant-based meats, this leads us nicely onto our review section this week. We were kindly sent some samples of a revolutionary new pork called Omnipork. The mince is available at Ocado now for around £4.50. And it's also available on the menu of the Royal China Club Chinese restaurant on Baker Street in London. They've got a huge sort of list as part of their menu that uses Omnipork, which is pretty cool. Yeah. What did you think of this? The name did put me off because I just hate the word pork.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think what they sent, it was amazing what they sent us. I tried the strips and the mints and the little ready meal things that, like, with the different ways of using the mints and the strips. And what was the other stuff? It was like lunch and...
Yeah, it was like a whole range of stuff. And they sent us some meals sort of ready made up that were kind of inspired by how you would use them, you know, to give you inspiration on how to use them in your cooking. And yeah, really realistic and really tasty, actually. It was slightly salty, but I guess like pork is salt, especially, you know, like bacon type style. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect to, but I did like it.
Yeah, I made I did like a Sri Lankan style curry with the strips. I did. Ooh. Yeah, it was nice. It was like pork style and pineapple, which lovely.
That sounds nice.
I've been wanting to try it for so long. And then when these strips came, I was like, right, I'm going to do it. And then yesterday I made mapo tofu with the mince.
Right.
Which is like, it's essentially pork mince in like a Szechuan style sauce and then silken tofu chopped up in it with rice. It's delicious.
Okay. Where do you get these recipes from? Because you always sound like you're eating so many nice dishes.
I hate the word. I'm not a foodie, but I just love, like, I just love looking at foods and I love sort of like Asian style cooking. Love curries, love all that kind of stuff. So I just Google them all.
Yeah.
I just Google them.
Good old Google. Yeah, I tend to just like Google, you know, the ingredients I've got and vegan, and it comes, I just look for the easiest recipe and then away I go.
That is such a good idea. I never do that. I always just ignore the things that I've got in my fridge and buy more. Yeah. Such a wasteful person, but I'm getting better, I promise.
Yeah, I know. I am as well. We were also sent, just in time for your birthday, some amazing cupcakes from Lola's Cupcakes. They've just launched their cupcake boxes for UK-wide delivery. And they kindly sent us a sample of their vegan box, which contained 2 chocolate fudge, 2 red velvet, 1 pistachio, 1 lemon and raspberry, and 2 passion fruit cupcakes. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, happy birthday to me.
Yes.
The passion fruit one was my favorite. I love passion fruit in cakes. It's delicious.
I do too.
Oh my gosh. What did they do to that sponge? Because it was just the softest, moistest. Oh, I hate that word. But you know what I mean?
Pork and moist are words of today.
So sorry. We'll have to put an explicit in the description.
No, they were so light and fluffy. Oh, and then the buttercream on top. And then you had like you say, the passion fruit sort of pips, I suppose they're called seeds, aren't they?
And the filling in the sponge as well.
Yeah, there were a lot of different elements to them. They were absolutely delicious. And I think, like, for my birthday, I'd probably kind of put that on my birthday list instead of my poor mum having to try and make a vegan cake again. So
just get me those.
I just want them all to myself. They're £25.60 for 8 cupcakes, and delivery starts at £4.50. So they're not, you know, they're not cheap, but they are really, really luxurious, aren't they? Like we said,
it's a treat.
Yeah. A real treat and really lovely for a birthday or something.
Yeah.
And next up, Sweet Freedom. So mine hasn't arrived yet, but yours has, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I actually love this brand. I've been using it for quite a while.
They do a whole load of products, don't they? Like fruit syrups, coconut syrup, gingerbread, chocolate syrup, chocolate spread. You can use them to like sweeten dishes in breakfast, smoothies, ice cream and on toast. And they're around sort of £3 to £3.50, available everywhere, aren't they? Holland & Barrett, Sainsbury's, Asda, Tesco. Which ones did you try?
Yes, I got sent the chocolate spread, but it's like a squeezy one. It was nice. So it says to use it in like hot chocolates and stuff, or to top pancakes with. And I topped it with pancakes.
Oh, nice.
Pancakes with it. It was delicious. And then yesterday I made a banana bread and I drizzled some of that on top. Oh my god. It was
wow.
good.
Wow. Oh,
it was good.
I need to come over to your house. You need to feed me.
I will cook you dinner. Honestly, I am the mum. I cook everyone dinner. I love it.
Do you? Oh, yeah. So sweet. Well, I'm hoping to come to Bristol at some point over the next few months. So I'll pop round and
please cook do. Me.
I want the Sri Lankan curry thing with the pineapple in, and
we'll do a simply vegan special at Molly's house.
That would be so cool. Yeah. And I can meet your cats. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Okay. Well, moving on. Lastly, as part of our news section, we always answer some reader questions. You can email us at simplyvegan@anthem.co.uk with your questions. This week we heard from Zia, who says she's a new vegan and she'd love some meal ideas, please. Well, you've obviously just shared some of yours, Molly. Do you have anything else you've discovered lately?
Do you know what? I think my advice to anyone is just keep it simple. Like, so there's loads of vegan stuff, processed stuff available now. And they're obviously, you know, handy and quick. But veg, fruit and veg is honestly, it's so versatile. And I know I feel like it's a recurring thing now, but it genuinely like surprises me so much. And I think, yeah, just stick to the fruit and veg and just kind of discover from there, really.
I mean, one good tip is to just start by recreating what you used to enjoy. So if you used to have spaghetti bolognese, try creating mince, but using plant-based ingredients. So you could use walnuts, you could use mushrooms, you could use lentils, anything that's kind of
has, good.
Yeah, meaty texture. And you can also like grate in extra veg as well. So you could grate in some courgette or some carrot just to kind of get those extra nutrients in there. Egg, I mean, if you miss egg, tofu is brilliant for a replacement. Yeah. Or if you're baking, there's so many different things you can do. You can use like chia soaked in water, I think, which kind of expands, which is really clever.
I think that's the same with flax seeds as well. And, you know, not the healthiest, but you can, you know, I think cans of Sprite. I've never done this before, but this is like what people have been saying. Sprite or Coke or like any sort of fizzy carbonated drink is an egg replacer. I don't know, but that's what they're saying.
Oh wow. So I guess that's to get the air into it, I'd imagine.
Think so, yeah, to create like the bubbles and stuff.
Yeah, I'm really not a baker, so you know.
No, me neither.
I'm more of a cupcake delivery girl.
Hint.
I'm trying to think what other meals I've had lately. I mean, chickpeas, you can do so much with chickpeas. Use your blender, just kind of chuck things in it to make some amazing pestos and sauces. You know, get those herbs, get flavors in there. You really want to, I mean, my spice cupboard has never seen so much action since I went vegan. It's just constantly on the go.
This is the thing, isn't it? I think that like before when like, you eat meat or whatever, you get the flavor from everything else. And that's what you need to remember when you're coming into a vegan diet. It's just like, don't be afraid of flavor. Just I throw in maybe a bit too much spices and herbs or whatever, but it's nice.
Yeah. And the texture is the other thing that you need to think about. So, you know, you don't want kind of sort of mushy texture, do you? You know, if you're cooking with tofu, make sure you're kind of crisping it up. So you've got the crunch that you might get from sort of crispy chicken or something like that. So that's another good one to think about. Another question we had in was from Rachel, who said she's struggling with energy levels. What food should she eat to stop tiredness? I have definitely noticed my energy levels improve, apart from today, that is, because I was at Camp Festival yesterday. I've definitely noticed my energy levels improve since giving up caffeine. Because you're not kind of getting those spikes, are you? So you basically what you want to do is keep your energy levels as constant as possible, don't you? So anything that's going to give you an energy spike, such as processed sugar, processed foods, white carbs, and caffeine are going to kind of send you up there, but then you're going to come down and then come crashing down. You want to kind of keep them consistent. You want sort of slow release carbs, so things like oats are really good. Nuts, butters, complex carbohydrates, isn't it?
I think so. I'm really not an expert on stuff like this. I'm kind of going through the same process at the moment, because I think I mentioned it a few last episode that I wasn't eating the greatest. There was a lot of processed foods, and I noticed that my energy levels were dipping. Yeah. And I just kind of switched more to like a whole food diet. So I think, yeah, you know, everything that you just listed is kind of whole foods, isn't it?
Yeah. Go for like brown basmati rice. That's a good one. Yeah. Or whole grain. Always go whole grain. And yeah, just stick on the plant-based wagon, whole foods, rather than the, you know, the processed vegan options out there. Yeah. And that should help. Loads of water. It's so boring, but it really does make a difference. Like earlier on, I was just feeling so tired, and my friend was like, just get loads of water down you. And actually, I had a glass of water. It did feel better.
It's honestly, it's just the gift from God. I love it. Water is my favorite thing in the whole world. I want water tattooed on me. I love it.
I love water. You heard it here first on the Simply Vegan podcast.
I love water.
But it's so true. You know, you just need someone to constantly remind you, don't you? Herbal teas are good. I have red bush tea. Because I'm not crazy about herbal teas. It doesn't feel like
a proper
cup of tea. So I have red bush, which is naturally caffeine free with some oat or soya milk. So yeah, I kind of like that first thing in the morning. And I think it's more of like a placebo effect, because I can't wake up without having a cup of tea. But yeah. I switched to red bush and it still wakes me up. I think it's just the fact you're having a drink.
I think it is. And it's just like that warmth. And it's like in your mind, you're thinking that it's the caffeine and whatever, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, just to finish off this episode, for anyone who's been listening for a while over the past sort of three seasons, our lovely Gabriella, who was hosting before Molly, has had a baby boy, so that's really exciting.
Congratulations. Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, he's absolutely gorgeous, and she had him at home because she's such a kind of a yoga sort of guru, and she's very holistic and very not basically the opposite to me. She's very very calm, and she did kind of all the hypnobirthing. She had her first baby.
Amazing.
At home, no pain relief or anything. So go, Gabriella, you are superwoman.
You go, girl. Literally amazing. That's so exciting.
Yeah, so I'm really happy for her, and we hope that you get on okay and get enough sleep.
You need it.
Yeah. Well, next up, I'll be speaking to Romy London, who is a vegan recipe creator and a vegan photographer. She's a blogger. And she's sharing kind of like a day in the life of, you know, a vegan recipe developer, and also some of her favorite meals, exciting new ways to cook. So, yeah, really good one if you're kind of lacking inspiration for cooking at home. Stay tuned. Hi, Romy. Welcome to the Simply Vegan podcast. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I would say I'm good. Did you know, like, I didn't grow up in the UK. So whenever somebody asks me, how you doing? I actually respond and it throws people off completely.
Oh, bless you. You start telling them about your personal problems and things. And they're like, no, I was just being polite.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so automatic when somebody asks. Only like 5 seconds later, I realise, oh, damn, I answered the question again.
So where did you grow up then?
I grew up on the Dutch, German, Belgian borders. So I have a German passport, but I've never felt particularly German, just because my entire childhood I basically spent in like three different countries all the time.
Right.
But yeah, I moved to England 9 years ago now. Yeah. Long story short.
At what point did you go vegan then?
That was in 2014. So that's over 7 years ago now. And I went vegan literally from one day to the next, basically overnight. But it's like, when I look back at it, it was actually like a longer process it was always in the back of my head already. And I've always idealized going vegan for Yeah, I would say ethical reasons, but I think ethical reasons are just very personal. What somebody sees as ethical is, might not be the same for somebody else. But I had this experience when I was like 11 or 12 years old where I saw somebody kill a deer. And, you know, when you're at that age, you kind of think like, oh, they brought a deer home. Oh, I want to see it. I want to see the cute deer. Yeah. And then I got to see how they cut it open and they like hung it up to bleed it out and how they took the liver out. And then the next day we all had liver dumplings for lunch. And to this day, that kind of experience just made me like, even just smelling this soup nowadays makes me sick to my stomach for days. It was just one of those things where I, for the very first time, just made that connection. And then, you know, I would never eat that soup again or, you know, that animal again. But it still took a long time for me to properly, you know, click and make that connection for not just deer, but for other animals as well. So I think in 2014, it just finally clicked when I realized what it actually is that I'm eating. And I was actually quite disgusted by it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why I just personally, like for me, veganism and like me not eating animal products, I think it's mostly like a feeling of disgust. Like I don't want to eat it. That's mainly why it is. It's not like I'm forcing myself not to eat it. It's more like I really don't want it.
Yeah, I was the same actually, and because it's also hidden, isn't it? You know, you don't see what goes on, and obviously, you know, that insight into what actually does happen when an animal is killed and then prepared to be eaten, I guess, must have been quite a shock.
It was just so distant from what actually happens behind the scenes because, you know, for us, it's just, oh, you go to the supermarket or you go to the butcher and then you buy the products there and you don't actually get to make that connection of that was a living being before. I mean, I don't know if you've watched Clarkson's Farm yet on Amazon Prime.
No.
But we actually watched that last night and you can, spoiler alert, you can see how his sheep get like little lambs. And then at the end, obviously the lambs get sold off for the meat. And then you see like, you know, the meat in the box. Whereas half an hour before you went like, oh, look at those cute lambs.
Yeah.
So that's like, I even said to my fiance, I was like, yeah, see, like, this is the kind of connection that you don't make when you go to a restaurant or when you go to the supermarket and you pick up like a plastic wrapped chicken, whatever, you know, you don't make that connection. So
no, I honestly think that very few people would actually eat meat if it was, you know.
Yeah. If you had to make that connection. I mean, it's something different when you're in a piece. Like a part of the world where you have to rely on animal resources to survive because, you know, there's not much growing there, et cetera, et cetera. So it's different when you have to in order to survive. Whereas nowadays, like, I mean, I don't need to eat animal products to survive. So I'm absolutely fine the way I am now. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're a recipe developer, aren't you? And a sort of a food photographer and obviously a vegan blogger. Have you always had a passion for food or did this sort of come later?
I would say no. Because as a kid, my mom is meticulously clean. So whenever I even attempted to do anything in the kitchen, you know, she would find fingerprints and she would be like, oh, what have you been doing here again? So, you know, growing up, I never really had that space and that freedom to kind of experiment with food. I've always been creative in like different ways. Like I drew a lot when I was little. And then I think when I was in my early teens, I just started songwriting and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And making up my own songs on the keyboard. So I've always been creative, but that creativity never went into the kitchen, probably mostly due to external factors.
Yeah.
But when I went vegan, it kind of forced me. I mean, it was 2014 back then. So there were some options out there. It was probably easier than it was, I don't know, back in the 80s or so. But still, there wasn't much. Yeah. And it kind of forced me to learn so much about what is actually in the food that I'm eating. And also, yeah, kind of brought me to experiment of, oh, what can I make? You know, what can I prepare for my work lunch? And what can I have for dinner? And what can I have for breakfast? And I then realized how creative that all actually is.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what made me fall in love with that whole process of experimenting and trying new things and trying different dishes. And I always say this, but going vegan has actually made me eat such a bigger variety than I've ever eaten before. Because it just really opened my eyes to so many other ingredients and cuisines that are out there that I've never really looked at before. So
yeah, what you're saying really rings true with me, actually. It's like a whole new world, isn't it? And
it really is.
I think a lot of people see veganism as very restricted. You know, you take away all these things, what are you left with? But actually, it's like opening a door to a whole new kind of exciting way of eating and different ingredients and, you know, like you say, experimenting with cooking in different ways. So what's sort of an average day like for you then as a recipe developer?
I have to say, no 2 days are ever the same, but that's probably a very cliche thing that people say nowadays that work freelance. I kind of break up my weeks into different things I do on different days. Like Mondays are usually my kind of admin and catch-up days, because I know there's usually something left, you know, from the week before that hasn't been done, and I kind of need to pre-plan my week a little bit. And then I usually, from Tuesday to like Friday, do like different projects, either for myself and for my blog or for clients. So I both do like recipe development and photography for my own blog, but I also do that for clients. So everything vegan, of course. But yeah, that's basically how I break up my work. So how my day looks like kind of depends on what day of the week it is. But yeah, a typical day. I think in the morning, I'm an early-ish riser, I would say. I'm not like crazy like 5 a.m. That's like too early for me.
Yeah.
I get up at around 7, but I always, like, I need some quiet and alone time in the morning. I'll happily work later in the evening, but I need some quiet time in the morning to relax and not feel like I'm, you know, hitting the ground running with my work day.
Yeah.
So usually it's probably not a very good thing to do, but I usually spend like an hour in the morning just lying in bed and just checking my emails and just scrolling through social media and just kind of, you know, feel a little bit entertained by what other people post. I usually have breakfast. Sometimes it's just coffee, depending on how much I ate for dinner the night before. And then, yeah, I usually just get on my laptop and just like pre-plan my stuff and then start cooking, start photographing, or start heading to the shops to get ingredients to cook and photograph. I do have some very late evenings often, though, because I really realize the older I get, the less I like rushing in my work. In order to be like creative and to create good quality, it kind of just takes time, and rushing just doesn't work like that. So I often just take my time when I create things and just focus on creating good quality content.
So where do you get your inspiration from? So, you know, if you're going to create a new recipe for your blog, for example, where do you start?
Oh, there's lots of different places. Obviously, on the one hand, consuming content that other people post kind of triggers a little bit of that, you know, get some ideas. Sometimes, you know, it's a mix of like, oh, you know, somebody's like made these blah, blah, blah on TikTok, and that's currently going viral. Maybe I should, you know, hop on that trend and create a little something like this with a little bit of a twist to make it my own. So that's obviously one thing that you can do. But I also like to, funnily enough, I've been doing that this morning. I've been pre-planning for Halloween.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
So sometimes I just see what kind of ideas come up, either to do with a specific season or with a specific ingredient. And I love doing these brainstorming sessions. I usually write down like 100 different things, and I know at the end I'll only manage to do 10 of them, but still, you know, there's more ideas coming than what I could actually do.
Yeah.
What I've started focusing on a little bit more this year, though, is actually to do some keyword research to kind of see, okay, what are people actually looking for on the internet, like what are people actually searching for, and then trying to create the recipes that people actually search for. So that kind of takes part of the thinking and coming up with something process away from me, but makes it easier for me to know what is worth working on that actually gets people to find the recipes on my website. So
what are people searching for? What do people want in terms of vegan food?
That's a good question. No, I always like, I make massive lists of everything that I find that might be worth creating. And a lot of the things are very dependent on current trends. or the seasonality of it. I mean, if you have a food blog or if you are on Pinterest, like those are the two things where you kind of have to work a long time in advance, because it takes Google and Pinterest such a long time to know how to properly categorize what you have posted there to then push it out to people at the right point. So usually you kind of have to work 5 to 6 months in advance, which is crazy. Like, I know lots of people that have just finished their Christmas recipes, and it's, you know, it's the middle of summer. So
yeah, it's so depressing. I always get the Christmas in July press releases, and I'm like, I literally have just got into summer now. I do not want to think about winter again.
Exactly. Like, it's crazy when you work in this field, because, you know, things like TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, they are different, where you go with the season, whereas on other items you kind of have to work so far in advance. It's a bit of a logistical nightmare when you do more than one platform.
Yeah.
But yeah, to get back to your question, a lot of people have in recent months kind of searched for lots of things that have been trending on TikTok.
Okay.
Which is understandable, because TikTok just really exploded in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things coming at the moment, like vegan French toast and vegan cookie dough. And obviously, as it's summer, lots of people look for ice cream or cookie dough ice cream. So kind of like combining. Or do you remember when the feta pasta was just like a really big thing online? Everybody made this baked feta pasta and then made vegan versions of it, including me. Lots of people look for those kinds of things as well. So that's a good place to go from.
I need to explore TikTok a bit more, I think, because my daughter uses it a lot. But yeah, it's not something us sort of 40 somethings use.
I feel you. It's taken me a while to kind of get into it as well. I had an account for ages, you know, like literally years ago when the app first started, and then I've never used it because it just seemed to be all about dancing. Yeah. But there's so many different niches on it. Like, now when I look into my account, I don't even get to see a single dance video, because TikTok has realized that's not what I'm looking for. So, I mean, there's lots and lots of food content out there, and I kind of love that short form video. It's not so much about being instructional, it's more about being inspirational.
Yeah.
To, you know, inspire somebody, I don't know, to make a dish or to try a new technique or something like this. And yeah, it's just like a nice way to get some entertainment in your brain in the morning, basically, at least for me.
That sounds brilliant, because I think sometimes you just need an idea, don't you? You kind of get to, I don't know about other, you know, people, perhaps our listeners would disagree, but I kind of get to 4 o'clock and go, oh, dinner, right, what am I going to cook? And then just kind of look in the fridge, and sometimes you'll feel in the right mood for it, and you'll get the inspiration you need just from the ingredients you've got. But other times you're like, I literally have nothing. I don't know what to cook. I just, it's just getting those quick ideas and then sort of throwing it all together.
Exactly.
So tell us about a few of your favorite meals then. What kind of food do you like to cook the most?
I think what I like to cook is very, you know, varied. It's not like, you know, I'm just the person that just cooks a lot with, like, I don't know, chocolate, or bakes a lot, or just makes savory dinner dishes. I don't know. I like to create a little bit of everything. I know I had a phase where I was creating so many different breakfast recipes. I really like to cook roast dinners, which is really exciting. I think it's just one of those really wonderful types of vegan foods where you can just go all out with.
What kind of things do you include in your roast dinners?
Yorkshire pudding and roast potatoes, of course. Like, those are the two basics that always have to be there.
Do you get them to rise, the Yorkshires?
Yeah.
I'm not there yet.
I've done like a massive like experiment series on my Instagram stories last summer when I was trying to nail Yorkshire puddings. And I think I did about like 16 or 17 different recipes in the end.
Wow.
Until you know what my problem was? I always wondered how people get them in that shape that they are risen on the sides and have a hole in the middle. Until I realized that's just chemically how the egg works in it. And it's just not something that'll be that extreme as it is in non-vegan Yorkshire puddings with vegan ingredients.
Yeah.
But no, I do get them to rise. They work out quite well. I think I've nailed that recipe by now, luckily. But yeah, like, apart from that, I mean, it always needs a good gravy. And then I usually just add some vegetables, like roasted vegetables, whatever's in the fridge, if if I want to be quick and not, you know, spend too much time on each individual item. I really like seitan, but I also really like nut roasts. So that's usually what my mains are on the roast dinner.
Yum. Do you make seitan yourself?
Yeah, I do, from scratch.
It's actually quite easy, isn't it? It is.
It just takes time. It's kind of like baking bread.
Yeah.
Not breaking bread. it's very similar to that because you can make it really quick and easy, but if you want to get like a really good texture and a really good flavor to it, it takes time because it needs to rest in between the different stages if you make it from scratch. I love doing those things. I mean, I work from home, so, you know, it's no problem for me to rest something in the fridge for like 2 hours and then add another thing to it and then rest it again. It's not a massive issue, but yeah. I also understand if somebody like works full time out of the house and wants to create something like that, it's a bit of a time investment.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good tip. I've got sort of a quick and easy recipe, but I feel like I need to sort of take it to the next level now and experiment a bit more with it.
Yeah. I mean, seitan can be a bit, I don't want to say complicated, but it can be very, you could do so many different things with it in terms of flavoring and texture that it can be a bit overwhelming when you start it and you don't know what you're going to try first.
But yeah, it's an exciting sort of ingredient, isn't it? Like you say,
it really is.
Lots of options there.
As long as you're not gluten intolerant.
Yeah. So what about tofu? I know you've got like a free tofu ebook, haven't you, on your website, romylondon.com?
RomyLondonUK.com.
UK.com. So
just needed to clarify the country, you know. Yeah.
So what are some of the cool things you do with tofu then?
I love cooking with tofu. I always find it really funny. But I probably have been there at some point in my, you know, journey as well where I didn't know how to cook with tofu. Because it's one of the things you see in like vegan recipe groups on Facebook or in general, you know, whenever I speak with non-vegan friends, so many people always say like, oh, I don't know how to, you know, well, tofu, I don't know, I just can't make it taste good.
Yeah,
it's just really bland, isn't it? It's like, well, yeah, if you don't add anything to it, then yeah. It will be bland. I love making like a tofu katsu. That's actually in my ebook as well. Chris is really, really nice crunchy texture around the tofu that works really well. But I also love making like a simple sticky tofu. And I've got different recipes for that. Some are on my blog and some are in my ebook as well. You basically just, you break up the tofu. I like to usually do that by hand just so that the pieces are not so equally, you know, rectangular, but they have a little bit of a rougher shape. It makes it more interesting to eat.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then coating it in corn flour and frying it in a bit of oil first so that it becomes crispy.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best ways to prepare tofu if you want like a quick and easy tofu recipe. Just coating it in corn flour, frying it, and then adding a sauce to it. So that I usually add something like maple syrup to my sauces just to kind of caramelize it a little bit more. And then stir a little bit of corn flour into the sauce so it becomes really thick and sticky in the pan. And then you can do like so many different things with it.
Okay, well, that sounds really tasty.
And it's really fast. You can literally get that done within 20 minutes. So.
Yeah, that's my kind of cooking. Nice and quick, job done. I'm yet to get my nine-year-old to eat and enjoy tofu. So, yeah, I think I need to keep experimenting there.
Level it up.
Yeah, level it up. So, I mean, how do you ensure your meals are sort of nutritionally balanced?
In the recipes that I share on my blog, I'm usually focusing on the taste factor. So I'm not like a nutritionist or a dietitian or anybody. So I don't give any advice on that kind of field. But for me personally, for what I, you know, personally eat, I always try to include different types of food in a meal rather than, you know, just pasta and just red tomato sauce.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel very balanced if it's just those like two things combined.
Yeah.
So to combine different things or try to sneak like an extra ingredient in somewhere, whether that's a vegetable or something like this, or a spice or some herbs or something like this. So that's usually how I try to, you know, balance it. And also trying to eat very varied. So I usually don't eat the same thing 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
I mix things up basically, but it also helps me that my fiance is a big eater. So if I've cooked too much of one item, he'll happily finish that.
Yeah.
That don't have to eat it for 3 days anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's usually how I try to make it. But, you know, I mean, the perfect diet doesn't exist. So
yeah,
nobody will, you know, have the perfect amount of everything that they need. And it's so individual as well. I mean, the most important thing for me is that the food tastes good. So yeah, that, you know, I want to eat it and I'm not, you know, forcing something into my body that I don't like feel like I agree with.
Yeah, it's a really good tip, actually. I think it's, yeah, just keeping it varied, mixing it up as often as possible.
Exactly.
What tips would you give to anyone wanting to be a bit more inventive with their vegan cooking?
Yeah, I think one thing that really made me a little bit more creative and go out of my comfort zone with my cooking is to focus on one ingredient and then kind of go from there. So that could be, for example, I don't know, let's say you've never cooked with sweet before and you just bought a sweet in the supermarket. And yeah, I like to do stuff like this, just buying a new ingredient that I'm not familiar with, you know, that I don't really know how to cook or what to make with it. And then I often start, you know, just looking on Pinterest. I was like, okay, what could I make with this ingredient and have an idea? It's like, oh, people make soup with it. Oh, people have roasted this. And then, oh, maybe I could, you know, oh, maybe I could make a soup and then I could combine it with like different flavors and maybe I put ginger in it. That's usually how it starts for me to become a little bit more creative and get out of the comfort zone. Like I feel lots of people have this kind of comfort zone of like 10, 20 recipes that they always make because it's what they know how to make.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to try and do something new, it can be a bit overwhelming if there are too many different ingredients and options out there. So it's good to focus on one kind of hero ingredient and then, you know, take it from there and then figure out, oh, what can I make with this? Okay, I want to make a soup. And I'm like, what other ingredients do I need in order to make that happen? And then kind of go from there.
I've spoken on the podcast before about the Riverford veg box I get every week, and I find yeah, that's brilliant for that, because like you'll get turnips and
oh yeah,
I'll literally be like, I don't think I've ever eaten turnip in my life. I don't know why, I just haven't. So yeah, like you say, you just start googling it and they're like, all right, okay, you can roast them as part of your roast dinner or use them in place of potatoes. And yeah, before you know it, you've just got a whole new ingredient that you're cooking with.
Those veg and fruit boxes are really, really good in order to kind of force yourself almost to go out of your comfort zone and try something new and figure something out. They're really, really good. I had a veg box like that last year as well, you know, during the first lockdown when
yeah,
you can't get any veg in the supermarket. No, that's, it kind of like gets you out of your comfort zone to create something new and to figure it out, basically.
Yeah. Well, finally, you're working on your first cookbook, aren't you? How does that work? I've always, you know, I've always been quite interested. Do you kind of pitch it to the publishers? And then, and you know, where do you start?
I think probably the way how I got into this whole book writing thing is probably not the most conventional way. Because I've gone to talks before where people talk about, oh, how, you know, how do you get to one day do your own cookbook and how you need to work on it and how to pitch to publishers. I was actually quite lucky that a publisher contacted me. So I can't really say much about how to best pitch a publisher because I've never had to do it. But yeah, I was quite lucky that this US publisher reached out to me almost a year ago now. And they were really keen to publish a book with me. They only do cookbooks. Well, primarily cookbooks. That's like their big focus. And they've got lots of vegan and vegetarian books already as well. And then we basically just brainstormed some ideas of what could the book be about. They usually, like this particular publisher, they do themed books. So it's not like the book is about me as a creator. It's about the topic that I'm creating. And I just happen to be the person creating that topic.
Yeah.
So my book's all going to be about vegan roast dinners.
Lovely.
So all of those like typical, like what in the UK we see as like, you know, the typical festive Sunday meal, or people in the US would probably see as like the really festive meal to have on Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter or 4th of July or whatever other celebrations they want to create. And yeah, that's kind of like why I've been creating so many roast dinners in the past year, testing out recipes.
You're going to be sick of them. You'll be like, no more roast dinners, thank you.
Yeah, I've actually, since I finished my recipe testing now about two and a half months ago. And I actually, you know, I got to that point. I'm just like, I just don't want to eat any roast dinners for like a couple of months now. It's kind of, when you cook that every single day, you know, during the week as well.
Oh my God.
It gets to that point when you feel like, well, I'm eating this roast dinner.
Yeah. So you kind of come up with the ideas and then you sort of experiment, test them out, and then presumably you're photographing the finished sort of meals.
So in my case, I photographed and tested and wrote all of the recipes. They, like publishers in general, also work with chefs that are not photographers.
Yeah.
So I just happened to be able to do both. But when they work with somebody who's just a chef and a food writer, but not a photographer, they kind of split it up and then book a different photographer to recreate and style and photograph the dishes. Now, in my case, as I did both, which was really handy. And also I work from home and I've got like my little home studio right next to my kitchen. So yeah, I think it's probably the best case scenario to do both. Cause you know, once I've finished a dish and it looks good and it turns out well, I can instantly just pop over and just take some photos of it.
Yeah.
So that worked quite well for me. I mean, what we did when we started the whole process is that I had to come up with some example ideas of what I feel the recipes in the book could be. So I basically just wrote like a table of contents of how I would imagine the book to be broken up into different chapters and what kind of recipes I would imagine and even in every chapter. But nothing was set in stone. You know, they also said, you know, it's just so we get an idea of the feel for how you imagine the book to be and what kind of recipes should be in there. And then I had to send them a couple of test recipes within the topic of vegan roast so that they could cook some of my recipes to make sure that the recipes I create actually do work.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we just agreed like a timeline from there of like when I would be able to finish my manuscript. So, you know, the manuscript is basically everything that is the text in the book. Then I tested recipes. I had 4 months from when I started testing to when I had to hand off my manuscript.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had to really time manage.
Yeah, sounds quite, yeah, as usual.
So I get everything done, yeah.
Do you feel that sort of encouraging or inspiring people to get creative with their cooking using plants is kind of a form of activism?
Oh, I definitely think it is. I mean, you know, there's people have different ideas of what activism means or what it doesn't mean. But I feel, you know, even from a psychological perspective, there are so many people out there, if you shove an idea in their faces, they will be completely defensive about it and not even want to take it on. Mm. Whereas if you just go and lead by example and just show them how easy it can be without, you know, shoving it in their faces, I kind of feel it can create, you know, change in a lot of people that, you know, may have otherwise, you know, never wanted to make that change. Yeah. So I've already had so many people, you know, people that I've worked with like years ago that I never thought would go vegan or that were just, you know, just making vegan jokes about it back in the day have now gone vegan themselves.
Yeah.
And or people that I used to say like, oh, I don't think I could ever do that. And yeah. And now, you know, slowly they're just like going vegan one after another, or just even just telling me, you know, they're reducing, they're not eating meat anymore, they've stopped having dairy and they're reducing everything else as well. So it's just kind of great to see that, you know, by being kind to other people and, you know, accepting that they are not at the same point where I am, just kind of makes them, yeah, wanting to do what you do as well at some point. So it's just really great to see.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for inspiring everyone and hopefully turning a few more people vegan. When can we expect to see your cookbook out?
It's currently due to come out in early 2022. I was hoping it would come out before Christmas, but because the book publisher, you know, they have a lot of other books that need to go live as well, and they kind of need to schedule everything months in advance. At the moment, it's scheduled for the 8th of March 2022, but that might still move forward or a couple of weeks backwards, depending on, you know, how we get on along the way, if there's any delays or anything like this, or maybe some things happen quicker than we expect them to.
Yeah.
You never know. So it's just a rough date at the moment.
Yeah.
And the book will be available worldwide. I'm not sure which stores are going to stock it yet. I think I'll probably have more of an idea about that when it comes to the publication date, but it'll definitely be worldwide on Amazon.
Fantastic.
So that's one place where people can definitely get it.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to seeing that and hopefully get those Yorkshire puddings to rise at last.
Yeah, they're in the book as well, actually.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks so much, Romy.
Thanks so much for having me, Holly.
Well, that brings us to the end of the first episode of Series 4. Thanks so much for listening. Please do drop us a review on your platform of choice. Follow us on Instagram at Simply Vegan Podcast and at Vegan Food and Living. Please do join us next week when I'll be speaking to a former pig vet who gives us some interesting insights into factory farming, antibiotic use, and the campaign Scrap Factory Farming.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.